Hello and welcome to this week's podcast with me, Zoraida Curtis. Since April 2017, organisations with 250 or more employees are required to report their gender pay gap data and a written statement on an annual basis. And in this podcast, we discuss how organisations have been dealing with the gender pay gap reporting requirements, what the report should contain, and how many have actually been published to date. I'm delighted to be joined today by Mark Crail, Content Director at Expert HR, to discuss these issues. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Zoraida.
So, Mark, where are we now in terms of gender pay gap reporting?
There's just over 5 months now until the deadline date. The Government Equalities Office calculated before all the legislation came into effect that we could expect to see around 4,000 gender pay gap reports. Now, I checked just before this podcast and there was something just over 250 on the government website so far. So 250 out of 4,000, we're not very far, actually. We've got quite a long way to go, quite a lot of reports still to appear.
Why have there been so few reports published?
Talking to organisations that are going through the process now, there are a number of reasons. Some would like to be lost in the crowd. You know, 250 isn't that many. They're waiting till there are more up there. They don't want the focus on them. Others are waiting for specific competitors or for more people in their industry to publish so they got a sense of how good or bad they are. But mostly talking to people, it's because they don't really know what a report should look like. You know, there's no precedent for this. There's no model, no government model for how your report should look. People really don't know. Should it be one side of A4? Should it be a 4,000 page document? You know, they're waiting to see what other people do so they've got something to follow.
Well, that of course begs the question, what should a report look like?
Well, as I say, there are no rules, so it's entirely up to you to decide what you want your own report to look like. There are a number of options, really. It can be a standalone web page. It could be a web page within another section of your company website, because obviously it has to appear on your company website as well as on the government website. So it might sit with other aspects of employment. It might sit in an equalities and diversity section of your website. It might sit with other regulatory information, for example, around modern slavery statements. It could be a PDF download, if that's the best way to do it for your organisation. And some companies are planning to publish their gender pay gap data within the financial section of their company's annual reports.
So in a sense, is that not hiding the data amongst other numbers?
You might think that, Zoraida. Quite possibly. It's about deciding what really works for your company, what you want to say and what your message is. You know, one thing I would say is, you know, identify your target audience and produce something for those people. No matter where you publish it, that data is going to be found. So really, you need to think about the messages you're putting around it.
You refer to target audiences. What is the target audience and how does an employer go about identifying this audience?
I think there are a number. You really have to think. Who's going to be interested in this data? When I put it online, who's going to want to look at it? I think most organisations think this, is that their current workforce are going to be the people who are most interested. You know, and if you just publish that data up there and it says gender pay gap 24% or whatever the number might be, you know, that's going to go around your company fairly quickly. So you need to get your messaging right there. But there are a number of other groups, so potential employees. If I'm thinking about coming to work for your organisation, thinking about applying for a job with you, then this is the sort of thing I'm going to look at first. There are other groups, collective forums. Do you have a staff council? Do you have trade unions in your organisation? Because they're going to be very interested in what your numbers are. There may be companies that you do business with that are going to want to know. So, for example, you know, it doesn't happen yet, but it may be in future that people will start saying, before we do business with you, do you publish your gender pay gap report? Where is it? What does it look like? Why is your gender pay gap as it is? So, you know, potentially you need to think about them as an audience. Your peers, you know, people like you in other similar companies are going to be interested just as you'll be interested in their data. And of course, others in your own company, particularly if you've got, say, a group company structure where you might want to compare between the different legal entities in your group.
So with the main audience being your employees, what should you be saying to them?
It really depends on who your employees are and what they're going to want to know. So at one end of the spectrum, you may just produce a one-page report with a few graphics, a couple of sentences that explain things, something that's quite easy to get to grips with, to understand. You know, and you can put that, as I say, on one side of A4. At the other end of the spectrum, if, for example, you employ lots of data analysts and experts in employment and so forth, then your report should probably be a lot longer. It may be something that contains additional analysis, additional data. Really, it's about thinking, who are your employees? What sort of thing are they going to want to know? And what are they going to want to be interested in?
Well, going back to this multi-page document, what additional data are you actually referring to?
whatever's appropriate for you, really. So you might want to explain your gender pay gap in terms of pounds and pence, as well as in terms of percentages. All you're legally required to publish is that your pay gap is X percent. But really, what does that mean? You know, if a 17% gender pay gap exists, does that amount to 50p an hour, or does it amount to £1,000 an hour? Really, it gives something, you know, if you put that number there, it gives people something to place it in context, to get a grip of. You may want to look at it in terms of longer term trend. So if you've got the data, this is your gender pay gap now, but what did it look like last year and the year before that? You know, is there an improvement? Are things getting worse? Because again, you know, that needs a bit of explanation about why things are changing. Finally, you might want to look at how others in your industry are doing. So if your gender pay gap is 12% and your industry's gender pay gap is 17%, again, that helps to contextualise it, helps people to understand what's going on, how your company is doing.
And as more reports are published, should we expect any surprises?
I've seen quite a few surprises. Quite often when we're talking to organisations that have a very big majority female workforce, they're surprised that they still have a gender pay gap, because of course that's not really what the gender pay gap is measuring. You know, it sheds an interesting light on one aspect of equality, but it doesn't tell you everything. So it doesn't tell you anything about equal pay within an organisation, and it doesn't tell you anything about the numbers of men and women that are in an organisation. All it really does is tell you about the spread through the structure of men and women. So you can quite easily have a very big female workforce with still quite a hefty gender pay gap. The opposite side of the coin on that one is that we've spoken to a number of organisations, more than I would have expected, who have a negative gender pay gap. So in that sense, men are paid less than women on an average. Quite often the reason for that is not what you'd expect. It's because they have a very large male manual workforce. And so those lower salaries there, lower wage rates, are pulling down the average. And those organisations tend to employ very few women at all. The very few women they do employ are largely in professional roles. So they're in HR, they're in finance, they may be in marketing. So their salaries may not be enormous, but they sit just above that halfway line. And consequently, that creates a negative gender pay gap.
Well, that's quite interesting. Going back to the reporting, what do the early reports look like?
It's worth having a look through, because there's not that many at the minute. So if you're thinking about reporting, then, you know, see what other people have done and see what you think is good practice that would apply to your organisation. There are some very good ones, some nice short ones, some much longer that go into more detail and explain things. Find organisations that are a bit like yours and say, actually, I could take that aspect, I could take that aspect. These are things I would like to see in my gender pay gap report. That's worth doing. It's also worth looking at some of the ones which are, how can I put it, not so good. There are some pretty poor ones up there, and it's worth, I think, having a look at those and saying, while I'd like my gender pay gap report to look like this, I really don't want it to look like that.
And can you perhaps give us some examples of the areas where organisations have been going wrong?
Sure. I think some are just badly presented. Others, people haven't sat down and thought, well, who's going to be reading this and what will they want to know? But there are other areas where I think people are just making a mistake in terms of uploading their data to the government website. You know, just to give some examples, the regulations require that your report is signed off by a director or the equivalent in other legal structures of organisation. There are definite examples on the government website where the report has been signed off by a payroll manager or by a project manager or by someone else who clearly is not appropriate person to sign off the regulation. Sign off the report in terms of the regulations. There are one or two examples where people have gone in and they've filled in 000000. Potentially they may have complete zeros across the board. I doubt it. I hope that those people have done that, because they're going to come back at a later date and put in their real data. But hopefully they haven't just got it wrong. It's worth having a look and making sure that you understand what you're supposed to do before you fill in that government website with your company's data.
Thanks, Mark. That was a great input into where we are at in relation to gender pay gap reporting, and especially in relation to what the report should actually look like. You can find lots of resources on this topic on our website, including a section in the Employment Law Manual and a model gender pay gap report. That brings us to the end of the podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Zoraida Curtis. Until the next time, it's goodbye from us.